Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. This is the COVID-19 panel discussion. Today is Friday, February 19th, 2021. I'm Joe Vicnicki for the KFSK News Department, and we have lots to talk about again today. And we'll jump right in, starting off with Carl Hagerman, the incident commander for the Petersburg Borough. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Joe.
Well, let's talk about, start off with the expiration of the state's disaster declaration. What impact does that have here locally? You talked a little bit about that already this week on the radio, but let's go over some of that again and the changes and what that means here locally.
Yeah, you bet, Joe. We were at the final minute. This has happened a few times this fall and winter that the extension of the state's emergency declaration came down to the wire, and previously it had always been extended by the governor, but of course this time with the legislature in session, he felt it was up to them to extend it, and through political reasons and the failure to organize, I guess, the legislature right now, the extension wasn't possible. But yeah, it did land in our laps, as well as every other community in the state, on what to do next. And in Petersburg, we did have to do a quick review of our existing protective mandates, and the EOC is still very much, our goal is to continue with the same level of protections that we've had for the last few months. And so to that end, we have updated some mandates. Two mandates that we had in place did not need to be updated. They were not tied to the state's emergency declaration, and those are the face covering mandate and the mandate that concerns in-person participation at public meetings. Those two are still in place. But there are several others that needed to be updated. And so we have updated the harbor access mandate, which is mandate 5, concerning basically cruise vessels that come into Petersburg, their need to contact the health officer and discuss the health of persons on board before they disembark into Petersburg. Helps protect us from the water side of things, and make sure that anybody entering Petersburg basically on a tourism basis or a visitor basis is healthy and not a risk to our community. Also, Mandate 6, which is a mandate concerning the issuance, submittal of travel plans, mitigation plans from businesses that enter Petersburg doing critical infrastructure work. That has been helpful to the EOC to ensure that those companies coming into town understand what the scope of how to protect Petersburg is, and has allowed us to provide them information on local resources such as the COVID hotline, and it's been a good program, a good mandate so far. Mandate 7, actually Directive 7, is concerning the non-congregate sheltering program. We'd like to continue that. That program is pretty low cost to us. We've downgraded it quite a bit from the initial program, but it is still important if there are homeless individuals or first responders who need a place to shelter and isolate. If they do become positive, then this program will help us in that regard, and we won't have to worry as much about the virus being spread. We've got mandate number 9, which is our intrastate traveler mandate. We wanted to continue with that. We've caught quite a few positive results at the airport, and that continues to be a very important aspect of our local response, to have people test when they come into town. And a lot of those tests are, actually most of them, all of them are asymptomatic tests. People don't even realize that they have the virus, but if if left unknown, you know, they have the potential of circulating in the community and spreading the virus and creating a larger problem. So the travel testing between Petersburg and other Alaskan communities is important, and also important to maintain the interstate and the international testing that the state had developed and put in place. And so the borough is now proposing a new mandate that does pretty much mirror the state's interstate travel mandate, and would require testing of anybody coming into Petersburg from out of state. And so that's been a lot of work this week, just updating those and trying to land on the right language. Again, the goal of the EOC is to continue with the protections. I think the legislature has kind of signaled the political end of the pandemic, but as far as the EOC is concerned, the medical end hasn't arrived yet. And that's the important ending point, in my view. So the assembly will be considering all of these mandates on Tuesday morning, a special meeting that is only focused on the EOC proposed mandates. And that meeting is scheduled for 10 a.m. on Tuesday, the 23rd. Of February.
So, Carl, just to be clear, so some of those mandates continue whether or not the assembly takes action on Tuesday, or do all of them have to be continued?
Right now, the only mandates that are in place and continue to be in effect, are the face covering mandate and the in-person participation in public meetings. So the other ones, the harbor access, travel plan, submittal, non-congregate sheltering, and the traveler mandates, those all need to be approved by the assembly to be put back in place. Right now, none of those mandates are in effect.
Okay, and to be clear too, the state's former mandate requiring testing at airports, that's now just a recommendation, so it's no longer a requirement.
Yes, they. Sorry about that. They turned their mandates into their I guess they defined them lastly as health orders. Now all their health orders are health advisories. So they made some slight changes to the language and turned them into recommendations instead of requirements. And as we've seen up at the airport, right away there was an understanding by the travelers that that a recommendation is much different than a requirement. And participation in the testing program at the airport has dropped off.
Can you tell at this point what the lapsing of that state disaster declaration means for funding for any of this testing, especially? Can the borough still have that testing continue?
Right now, I believe that all of the testing programs will continue, particularly the airport testing program. Is funded through monies that were allocated from the CARES Act and also from FEMA. And I believe that those funds for the contract at each airport in Alaska are encumbered by the state right now. So those testing programs, and specifically the testing program in Petersburg at the airport, will continue until the end of June unless some other action is taken by the legislature.
Okay. For one of the mandates, you talked about in-person meeting by local groups, boards, et cetera. What's the consideration for that and whether that should continue? Are we going to get to a point again where the public can attend meetings locally in person?
Well, we surely will get to that point. And that is one of the mandates that's still in place that does not need to be approved or reissued at this point. So the assembly has the purview to end that mandate at any time. It's valid until rescinded by the assembly. And you know, I think we'll probably get there hopefully by, you know, late spring, summer, where we'll feel a lot more comfortable with the situation, and considering the vaccination level and the case counts are continuing to drop in Alaska. So that is a very good sign. I just don't think, speaking for myself anyway, there was not a whole lot of comfort at this particular time that it was the right time for the state to drop their declaration, and that bleeds over into any local community's approach to the pandemic as well. It's just we're close, but we're not quite there yet. So, you know, yes, we absolutely will get to the point where in-person participation in meetings is the standard. And of course, we all want to get back to that point. The assembly has the right and the authority to make that decision at any time.
Okay. And I think a couple other things to highlight in terms of face coverings, maskings. It's been reported elsewhere, but there are a couple of federal mandates that continue even with this state decision. One is on public transportation, and the other is a requirement on fishing vessels as well. So that's something for people to keep in mind.
Yes, very, very true. I saw that the ruling of the Coast Guard to extend that masking mandate to fishing vessels. And personally, I don't see that it's a realistic expectation, but it is definitely protective of the people on board. So we'll keep an eye on that one and see where it goes.
And then just looking at the dashboard this morning, Carl, three active cases in the community. No change on that. And 1,170 total vaccinations of first or second doses at this point.
That's true. Yes, that's just a little over 36% of our overall population. And if you look at the population that can receive the vaccine, which is anybody over 18, I don't have that percentage, but it's more than 36%. So Petersburg's doing a great job with the vaccination effort, and I again want to congratulate the hospital and public health for, you know, sorting that out and coming up with a very effective system. I've heard so many positive comments about how smooth that process is, and as well as the availability of being able to put your name on a waiting list and then to have the hospital give those people a call and see that waiting list process, you know, come to fruition with appointments for vaccines. They're doing a great job.
Okay. Carl, anything else from you before we move on?
I don't think so at this point, Joe. Thanks.
All right. Let's go next to Aaron Michael, State of Alaska Public Health Nurse. Been a while since we heard from you, Aaron. Hi, what's the latest from you?
Well, we are still continuing on with our interviews with positive cases as well as their close contacts, doing that locally as well as across the state. As Carl mentioned, across the state, the numbers have gone down, which is great, but we are still seeing kind of large clusters in places like fish processing plants or mines or places like that that have a lot of people working in a close setting. So there's always that potential that could happen in a place like Petersburg. So it's just really important that everybody do their best to try to keep our risk as low as possible by getting tested if they're having symptoms, staying home if they're having symptoms, wearing their mask, washing their hands frequently or using hand sanitizer. And even if you're not having symptoms, it's not a bad idea to take advantage of the hospital's asymptomatic testing, meaning getting testing even if you aren't having symptoms, just so that we kind of have a picture of what's happening in our community. Because as a lot of people may know, COVID can affect people differently. And some people never have signs or symptoms, or they're so mild that they don't recognize them as symptoms. So it's just really important that we have a good picture of what COVID is looking like in our community. So I would encourage people to take advantage of that free asymptomatic testing and call the COVID hotline. Their number is 772-5788 if you want to help kind of give us a picture of what it's looking like as far as COVID in our community.
Aaron, are you seeing any impact from the lapsing of the disaster declaration on the state level for the contact tracing effort?
Not so far. And I did ask about that at our most recent meeting across the public health And they said, at this point, we shouldn't be seeing anything changing. We're going to continue to do everything that we've been doing. Because of the lower case counts, we've been able to go back to doing our full interviews, meaning we ask every question we can possibly ask about this. So if you get a call, we really encourage you to answer the phone and talk to us, because it really gives us a good picture of where people have been when they're infectious, so we can warn those that they might have been around, and also trying to figure out where they might have caught it from. I'm glad that the case counts have gone down enough that we can do those full investigations again.
Okay. Other messages you wanted to get out today?
I would just encourage people, as Carl said, if you can get on the waiting list and get your vaccine if you're 18 or older. We're very lucky in this community. There are a lot of places across the United States and across the world that just don't have the opportunities that we do to get their vaccine so quickly. So I would encourage you, if you're not sure about it, talk to your medical provider. They can have that discussion with you and talk about the pros and cons of the vaccine. But that's going to be our best bet to try to get out of this quicker versus later, is the more people that we have vaccinated before these variants, which are popping up, before those really take hold and this gets much worse. So we just really would encourage people to get their vaccine if they can.
Okay. Wanted to ask about vaccines next, maybe to Phil Hofstetter with the Medical Center. We've heard about bad weather delaying shipments of vaccines to other places around the country. Phil, have you seen that here in Petersburg at all?
I'd have to check in with either Liz or Jen on any impacts to the to our vaccine supply. As far as I know, we did not have an impact recently with that. Liz, are you aware of any impacts locally?
No, we have been very fortunate so far.
Yep.
So there are clinics planned in March for the 5th and the 11th. I think those are still on track.
Yes, we do. Yep. We have our second dose clinic for people that got their vaccine on February 5th will be on March 5th. And there's a group of people who are out going to go out on the fishing grounds. And so we're trying to accommodate those people to have a little bit of an earlier jump on that second dose so that they can get out and get fishing and make money. So that day looks like it'll be March 3rd, and we'll reach out to those fishermen. But if there is anybody who is planning on going out and they're concerned that they may not be able to make that second dose on the 5th because of going out on the grounds, then they should give me a call, and I'll give you a few phone numbers here in a minute. Then the second Friday in March is March 12th, and we're going to do another first dose clinic. It won't be as big as on scale. We have the potential of maybe giving out as pretty much anybody who wants a vaccine, but we need to have people committed to receiving that vaccine. That's why the waiting list is so really important. And the waiting list can be accessed on the hospital website at pmcak.org. And if they, a friend can sign you up. It's just, we just need a phone number or email would be great. We can get a hold of you and get you on our schedule. Or you can give me a call at 772-5545. And often you'll have to leave a message, but I will get back to you within a day or so. And we want to get people on that list. And it doesn't always work. If we call you and it doesn't work for you, you don't lose your name on the list. You're still there, and we'll just try you again. And the state of Alaska allocations have opened up, and it's a tier structure. And so, of course, the groups of people that have been approved for vaccines are healthcare workers and people over 65, essential workers that are in that provide care and home, those kinds of folks. But they've opened it up now to people that are 50 years and over with high risk medical conditions, or who are essential workers and must work within 6 feet of others. And anybody that works in pre-K through 12 and childcare education staff, regardless of their age, as long as they're over 18, they can receive the Moderna vaccine. Pretty much most healthcare workers that if we haven't called you, this is your chance to get on the list. And then people who live or work in congregate settings. So a congregate setting is a place where, you know, you can't isolate from others. You're working next, you're around a lot of people. And because Search has shared their allocation, their federal allocation with Petersburg, we've been able to go beyond this group that the state allocation restricts us to. And thankfully, we've been able to get vaccine in a lot of arms, which is why, you know, we're looking at close to 50% of the people who are 18 and older have received the vaccine in Petersburg, which is outstanding. And we've got a really good return rate for people who got their first dose and they've returned to get their second dose. It's very, very high. So it's very encouraging to see that.
Are you still having people sign up on the waiting list?
Yes. Right now, I think we have about 150 or so on the waiting list. And if you feel like you thought you were on and you haven't gotten a call, if you could just please go ahead and resubmit your name on the waiting list. It will catch those doubles, or you can give me a call and I can, you know, verify that you are on the list. There are some people that live off island, and so it's a little tricky. And so we're very encouraged that the possibility of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine will be given authorization by the end of this month. And if that happens, that's a single dose vaccine. It's designed a little bit differently than the Moderna and the Pfizer. But for people who live remotely or who travel a lot, ferry workers are really hard to catch. People who fly a lot, you know, so the J&J vaccine is a good option for people like that. And the purpose of vaccination is not to, the purpose of vaccination is to prevent serious COVID infections and hospitalizations and deaths. And that's what this vaccine has demonstrated in all the studies and in all the trials. And this is what we are seeing now in people who are vaccinated. So I'm very encouraged that this is our way out. And there's a lot of information out there. So I really encourage people to go to their healthcare provider to get their questions answered. And there is a University of Alaska has an ECHO program every Wednesday, and it addresses questions about COVID-19. And it's at noon, and you can also view it on Facebook. So there's a Google for that. My phone number is 772-5545. If you want an asymptomatic test, please call the clinic at 772-4299. And then if you have symptoms for COVID, 772-5788. And it's really important to get tested, even if the symptoms are very mild, and especially in children. And the reason is that in some very rare situations, children can develop some severe complications 3 or 4 weeks later. It's very rare, but with a positive COVID test, the doctors will know exactly how to treat those weird symptoms. So I just can't emphasize, the test is really not that invasive, and it doesn't cost anything. So please consider the testing as part of the keeping preventing COVID in the community.
So with the lapsing of the disaster declaration at the state level, Phil, we talked about this a little bit last week, but how has that changed things at all at the medical center and operations?
Not currently as far as operations, but we are a little bit on a holding pattern because we're uncertain. We have a little bit of funding that we can still continue with asymptomatic testing. We have a little bit of uncertainty on the respiratory clinic and the way that we triage, making sure that we are not violating any of the waivers for healthcare, EMTALA, and some of the federal waivers that I mentioned last week. So it's a little chaotic, unfortunately. I think it causes a lot of confusion in the hospital system. We have been in touch with our the Alaska Hospital Association. Some hospitals are shutting down certain parts of testing, offsite testing. So we're trying to maintain as best we can with what we have and continue the free asymptomatic testing. But there's just unfortunately there's a lot of confusion at this point. And I guess what we can do and what we can't do.
Should mention anything's possible at this point. It sounds like the House is somewhat organized, so maybe there's a possibility that the legislature could look at extending that if they are able.
Yeah, my understanding is that there is a House bill in there for the declaration, and so we'll just have to watch and wait and see what happens with that.
Okay. All right, thanks. Let's go next to Erica Klute-Painter with the school district. Hi, Erica.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. You?
I'm doing well. Yep, hanging in there.
Let's see. Basketball games were canceled, but that's not because of COVID. It's because of bad weather, I think, right?
Yes, that's okay. Because of bad weather. So we had already canceled today because of bad weather, and we were hopeful for tomorrow, but it looks like it's still kicking up too much out there. So I think there's some conversation going on about maybe a possibility of something with Wrangell if we can work it out, or maybe a blue and white scrimmage of some sort. And we'll keep you posted on that.
Okay. And let's just rehash, you talked about it already this week, but for people looking at travel, for students, staff, parents, and families in and out of the community in the next few months, the policies that you've had in place, those are continuing.
Yes, at this point, that's the recommendation that we've been given, and that, and in order to keep moving forward as we are in our in-person setting, and also to do the best that we can to keep our activities going at the level that they are, you know, outside of weather, as we said. So, you know, those remain our goal, just to continue with the minimum amount of disruption to our kids. And we've been really fortunate. A lot of work's gone into that by the community, by students and staff, just to keep that consistent program going. And we're really fortunate that we are still there, and that we're even talking about things like basketball games and other activities coming up even this spring. As far as the testing, just to kind of piggyback on some of the comments that have been made by all of our medical professionals today, but talking through some of those things, the testing is really important. That's coming up more and more with activities as well. So in addition to the travel policy and the testing requirements there, there's a lot more talk about testing for activities and travel. So that's happening. There are some communities that are requiring it before any team can come in. And so, you know, any sort of larger event, like even a modified kind of regional event that might happen in a community for an activity, you know, we're going to clearly have some testing requirements that are going to have to be put in place for groups to come in into communities. And the other thing is just to do that, the shout out, and I guess just recognition of the efforts that we do have here. Our low numbers and our, you know, staying in that zone consistently here as a community is also allowing us to have some of these activities. So there are communities that have very, very, very stringent travel policies for their kids. And, you know, if we have numbers that are anywhere out of those norms for them, you know, they won't come. So, you know, even though we're, you know, as we continue to say, we're tired of the mandates, tired of talking about it, tired of masking. No one's more tired of it than me. But they're allowing us to keep moving forward with those activities. So I just, you know, just in recognition of those efforts, we appreciate it. Makes a huge difference. And also really excited about the amount or the number of people in the community that are receiving the vaccination and interested in that. And of course, are a lot of people on our staff that are also on that list and have already received their second doses, some of them. So we're moving forward, optimistic.
So Erica, I know the board already addressed the calendar for next year, but when does the board sit down and talk about what COVID protocols, if at all, happen next year and what that looks like? Does that happen sooner or later?
Well, it's those conversations are starting now. I was on a meeting recently this week, actually one this week and one last week, with Dr. Zink, Dr. Olson, some other people from DHSS and from our state medical staff, and they're doing a lot of work with districts on this topic on protocols, on mitigation strategies, on what things might look like next year. Of course, as Liz was saying, and Phil too, there's, you know, we're still in the kind of experimental phase here a little bit with how this is all going to roll out and play out, I think, with vaccination rates and sort of that herd immunity and all of those kinds of things that may be coming down the pike. Of course, we don't have a vaccine that's been approved for anybody under 18. Well, maybe that's not true. I think the Pfizer's approved for 16 and up, but anyway, not approved for below that. So as far as a large group of people being in the school buildings next year, you know, we'll have staff that'll potentially have a large majority vaccinated, but that's not necessarily the case for kids. So what they're telling us currently is to plan for some sort of mitigation strategies in the future still, some sort of masking, some sort of distancing within the classrooms, and potentially still looking, you know, at some of the pods that way. We've managed to work fairly, make adjustments as we've been able to this year. So certainly for some of our younger students, you know, we have some flexibility there as far as when and how things take place with masking and with groups and such. And there are lots of opportunities during the day for our youngest students to not have masks on. We have taken advantage of those small groups in pods, and, you know, so we're able to make, we have some flexibility, and that's been really helpful for us. Older kids, of course, it's easier for them to keep them on, even though they don't love it, but just easier, it's easier to manage that way. And they're pretty motivated because it does, you know, helps them keep their open lunch at high school and keep those activities going and, you know, that sort of thing. So they're telling us cautiously to be optimistic about it. Maybe there's some things that might be reduced, but to still plan on some sort of mitigation strategies for next year too.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to address?
No, I think that's it. Thanks, Joe.
All right. Sure. Let's go back to Carl Hagerman. Carl, anything we missed?
I think you missed Liz Cabrera, Joe.
Thanks for reminding me. let's get Liz Cabrera in on the discussion. Sorry, Liz, you're up next.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Carl. yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone about the Alaska Housing Rent Relief Program. That program is open for applications until March 5th. I was on a call the other day, and apparently they've already received over 12,000 applications. There is a substantial amount of funding available, and so I encourage people to check this out if you are in need of assistance with your rent or utilities. The assistance can be for up to 12 months. It can also be retroactive, so if someone is has been unable to pay and behind in rent, they can assist you with that too. The website is alaskahousingrelief.org, or you can call or text the word relief to the phone number 833-440-0420. And again, that deadline to apply for that is March 5th. So I encourage folks to check that out. In addition, the IRS announced this week that they had sent out all economic impact payments, and they will not be issuing any more. If someone did not receive both of their payments or did not receive the amount that they were expecting, you can still claim the amount on your 2020 tax form. And you need to go to irs.com, and they have a worksheet there that you can figure out exactly what your credit should be. On the IRS website, they actually don't call it the economic impact payment on the IRS site. They call it the recovery rebate credit, just to confuse everyone, I think. So that's what you would be looking for, is information on the recovery rebate credit. And lastly, also tax related, as part of the recent COVID bill, the IRS rules on how low and moderate income workers can apply for an earned income credit or a child tax credit has changed. And the big thing there is some people were laid off from their jobs early on and have been on unemployment, especially seasonal workers. In order to qualify for these credits, you actually have to have income from a job. So people who have been on unemployment for several months might find that they are no longer eligible for these credits. And the way they are addressing that is allowing people to either use their 2019 income or their 2020 income to figure out their child care credit, child tax credit, or earned income tax credit. So the thing would be to tell whoever's doing your taxes to run both your 2019 and your 2020 income and figure out which one results in the larger credit. And then you're able to use that one.
Okay.
And that's all I have, Joe.
Great. I'll just throw this out for maybe a future show, Liz. I'm just curious about any economic data you know about for the Petersburg area, for the impact from last year, unemployment numbers, job losses, lost revenue from businesses, that kind of thing, businesses that opened or closed. If you know of any sources of that information, maybe that's a topic for a future show or something. But
sure, I can look around for some of that.
Okay.
I'm sure I have it.
Any sources anywhere. So yeah, great. Let's now go back to Carl Hagerman. Carl, what else?
Thanks, Joe. Again, I just want to thank the community for everything they're doing, to keep us in such good shape, COVID-wise. It really is making a difference, as we heard today. The school is open. Those kids are in class. They're getting their instruction. They're able to participate in activities. And that is just huge, in this year. And so my thanks goes out to the community for doing all the right things and keeping us in this position. And that's about it for me. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Erin, Michael, anything else from the public health nurse?
No, I don't think so. Hopefully everybody has a wonderful weekend, and thank you guys for letting us do the show.
All right, thanks. And Phil Hofstetter, or let's see, Liz Bacom has left. How about Phil?
Yeah, no, I don't have anything to add. Thank you.
Okay, sure. And Erica Klute-Painter, anything else we missed?
Nope. We'll just keep you posted on any basketball happenings this weekend. So
okay, thanks. Liz Cabrera, did we miss anything?
No, thanks, Joe. We'll see you next week.
Next week, same time, 12:30 in the afternoon. You're listening to KFSK in Petersburg.